You know, key to understanding this whole ideology of transgenderism is the idea that your soul and your body are separate. In fact, one of the best books on the topic, I'm holding this up, if you guys want to read a good book on sexual ethics in the Bible, it's Love Thy Body by Nancy Percy. It's very readable. It's very clear. And her whole point is that in modern thought, there is a disdain for the human body in the sense that your body shouldn't tell you what to do. And so you look at, she interacts a little bit with the abortion debate, right? And you deal with the concept of you have a human and you have a person, right? And so they say that the baby in the womb is a human, but when does it become a person? Well, it's upon birth, or it's after birth, or at some point in time when they're medically viable. But according to the Bible, if it's a human, it is a person. You know, there's no division between the two. You look at the idea of sex, right? You have your biological sex. In fact, I was reading, and this will come up in my study, what did we used to call transgender people?
Transsexual,
right? So why do you think they're not called transsexuals anymore? Because sex is your biological sex. And gender is your self-perception of what you really are. And so when they're going to make this hard and fast division, they changed it from transsexual to transgender because they'd say that the gender doesn't match the body doesn't match the gender. Okay, so the idea is if you perceive yourself and you have a real sense that you are a woman trapped in a man's body, what do you change? You change the body. So you have not sex reassignment surgery, you have gender confirmation surgery, right? So this is the center of who you really are. The soul is who you really are. But in the Bible, and we kind of talk about this, that when God created man, he created them. It is immaterial and material, right? He formed Adam out of the dust and he breathed life into him. And both of those two things together make a human in the image of God. And so one thing that's, like in Greek thought at the time, they would say that the soul gets emancipated from the body. That the material world is evil. And so if you can live in a non-physical existence, that's kind of the highest form of heaven. You're liberated from the flesh. But when you look at the biblical worldview, when God created the earth, creation was good, right? And when we die, our soul goes up to heaven, but what's going to happen eventually? Right? Our body will be joined with our soul, and so the soul and the body are inextricably linked to each other. Your body is who you are. That's why it's very significant that Jesus came from an empty tomb. Okay, so that's a worldview that we're looking at, that the soul and the body are an integrated whole, and that your body is you, right? You know, you are soul and you are body kind of wedded together. Another thing is that God created humans, male and female, and so your anatomy impacts your destiny, right? Like, so what are some of the clear commands? What are duties and responsibilities and privileges that separate men and women? Like, what's something that a woman can do that a man can't do?
Have a baby,
right? Yeah. And that is huge, right? Have a baby and all that goes with it. And so women are wonderfully designed for that. So that's the most obvious one. You will never find a man who can have a baby, right? Now, when you look at men, I mean, what would be maybe a general category of something that men can do that women can't?
You said prostate cancer.
You have prostate cancer? A good thing. Good things. But I think probably the general category of strength. Now, it is true that you do have some women who are stronger than some men. Right? That is true. So you don't have like the hard and fast. That's why I always start off with what a woman can do that a man can't do, because that's just so evident and so clear. But in general, and as a biological fact, men are significantly stronger than women, although you do have some women who are stronger than men. Okay, and so that kind of when you look at the whole creation mandate, right, is to be fruitful and multiply and to rule and subdue the earth. And when you get into the curse, right, what was the curse that was on women? It was pain at childbirth. With men, they'll work themselves to death, right? They'll be overtaken by the ground. And so even that curse is like custom designed for each gender, that what they're called to do is just way more difficult. Yeah, and as we kind of go through, let's say, the Old Testament, you see very specific laws that apply to women that apply to men. We went to that passage in Leviticus, right, where when a woman gives birth to a male child, the male child has to be circumcised, right? That is a command only available to male children. The woman has to, cleanse herself from that impurity, right? That's only something that a woman can do, right? So the Bible doesn't see a difference between gender and sex. And then when you go into the New Testament, there is there's the commands for, husbands to be leaders within the context of a marriage and the women to joyfully submit. And so there is, clear, there's a goodness to creation, right? Where the males and females are both made in the image of God. They're both worthy, they're both esteemed, they both perform different functions. And that was something that was pre-fall, right? Women and men happened before the fall. And every person that's made right now is fearfully and wonderfully made. Okay, so you kind of get into, so how do we, any questions about that? So that's kind of the general argument. And even the commands against androgyny, that's kind of blurring the lines and not recognizing the goodness of men being men and women being women. Okay, any questions about that? That's kind of the short sketch of the biblical argument. And again, transgenderism, this would not be a case if it wasn't for the modern technology that we have right now. Like, you couldn't have a sex change 100 years ago. And it's kind of built on a worldview that is just so different that it's really outside the scope of what any biblical author would embrace at that time. So with that in mind, I guess, how do we minister to transgender? Okay, now how does the world minister to transgenders? In their minds, what do you need to do? Somebody is struggling with gender dysphoria, right? That's where their gender and their sex is out of alignment. What does the world say you should do?
Accept them, encourage them.
Mm-hmm.
Make the sex match the gender.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, it's like you have to do whatever it takes. It's like no cost is too much.
That you gotta be fully supportive and on board and affirm them.
Yeah, doesn't matter. It costs like $1 million, and that's just the right thing to do.
Yeah. Now, what else? I mean, what else does the world say you need to do? What do they say you shouldn't do?
Call them by the wrong pronoun.
Yeah, and why would that be so bad?
Because they've decided that this is what they identify as. Calling them other sex is not what they prefer.
Yeah, you don't misgender them. That'd be the word. Okay? What does the world say you should do or not do? I mean, what's kind of driving all this? I mean, what are they afraid is going to happen? If you don't minister to them in the right way,
they'll feel like they're harmed and they will harm themselves.
They'll harm themselves, yes. Right? And so we'll talk more about that a little bit later on, but yeah, there's way higher rates of suicide for that. Okay? And this is becoming a more common problem. Earlier data I showed you, like in the 2000s, gender dysphoria was something that impacted 1 in 10,000 people. Now the incidence, I believe, like among high school students, is 1 in 50. So we're from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 50. So there is a real sense of social contagion that is happening. And so I think I was talking to you, Vicky, and you was telling me that transgenderism is the new dyslexia, or not dyslexia, anorexia.
Wrong word.
Which I think makes sense, right? Because, I mean, what's the issue with anorexia? It's like there's a loathing of the body, right? I do not like my body. You know, I want to change it, starve it, kind of bend it to my will to look a certain way, right? So you can do that where you kind of despise the body that God gave you. And granted, you know, there are fallen parts of our body, but you know, the body that we have that's going to be resurrected is the one we're going to have forever. And it is, you know, we're fearfully and wonderfully made. So then we kind of broached the topic today of try as much as possible, and I'm a guy, I don't think I've had a meaningful conversation with a transgendered individual. You know, so hopefully at some point in time, but I'm sure at some point in time in the future, we're going to have somebody come to church, going to have to talk to them about it, talk through some of these issues, and it is going to be just more real and more pervasive. And so these are some quotes that I got from some of their websites where they kind of share. Actually, I got this from World Magazine, where Marvin Alasky kind of wrote about just some of the different experiences that people have. So, quote, "I knew a genderqueer couple that required you to use rotating pronouns for them. She, she, he, this, I'm not sure how you say those, his, her. I just said they or didn't talk to them. Most trans people just want to live and not turn everything into a battle." And so, you know, what he's saying is that there's some, let's say, genderqueer people who are advocates. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, they're the ones who want to sue the baker. But that's a small fraction of them. Okay, so that's why we need to be careful that, you know, we don't allow Fox News to kind of color our ideas of what all of them are like. Okay? And then here's another one. "I've been crying all morning. A friend posted a candid picture of me, and all I see is a horrible man I can't escape. This is never, ever going away, even after years and years of hormones. I want to die. Why can't I just disappear? I feel absolutely like a woman stuck in a man's body, and I spent a lot of time thinking and reading about transitioning. I occasionally have these insidious doubts. I've had anxiety since childhood and struggled with depression through my teen years. What if these thoughts of being trans are just me trying to escape from these problems? Maybe I just want a fresh start, and this is the most extreme way of getting that. I want to look like a girl. I never could. My body's an inverted triangle shape. My feet are size 12. People say suicide is never the answer, but I need to know why it's not the answer. Because as I can see, it is. That, or I get some bolt of inspiration from God. I pray every night. I don't even know who to or what for, because I need to change something." Okay? So you kind of read these, I mean, what kind of insights, I mean, do these quotes kind of give you about people who are kind of dealing with these issues?
The second to last one is interesting. I hadn't really thought about that. Like, the want for a fresh start, to know that I am so broken, I need a fresh start, maybe mm-hmm. this is the thing that'll do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's good insight.
I mean, that's a cry for the gospel. Mm-hmm. It's not what they think they're looking for, but that's,
yeah.
Yes, you need a fresh start. That's mm-hmm. absolutely correct. It's not for the reason you think, but.
Yeah. Yeah. What else kind of stands out to you about these quotes?
I
last one, but he doesn't like himself.
I think all of us would say that would be awesome.
Yeah, it's like great. I mean, yeah.
Got other thoughts? Good.
I also use like the word I a lot. Like it's very self.
Yeah.
But they still don't question whether they're wrong, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense. Like, they're thinking a lot about themselves, but they're certain that they're not misled.
Yeah.
It seems like.
Yeah, and I think you make a fair point where where what they're trying to do is they are trying to create their own identity. Right? And in kind of a postmodern world where, yeah, truth is kind of relative and everything, if you're going to create an identity, you're the one who has to create it. And so you kind of have this question like, who am I, right? So you're asking the question, and in a postmodern world, who answers the question? You do. So you answer your own question about identity. I mean, that's like trying to fly without an airplane, right? So when it comes to, let's say, the Christian worldview, who do we ask the question to? Right? Yeah, we ask God. And then God gives the answer. You know, so our identity is not built off of nothing. It's like, I don't define my own identity. And I think deep down people know, who am I? Well, I have to find the answers. I think people know that's just empty, right? So I think what you see a lot of these people is an identity crisis that's forged off of where they, you know, do not allow their body to dictate who they are. They're unwilling to accept that. So you do see a lot of, confusion. A lot of people and I say this in a non-condescending way, but truly disturbed, right? They truly have a sense of self-loathing where they're willing to mutilate their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
There's
really no answer for them outside of the gospel. Right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, right? So who am I? Well, I'll ask myself. And I think that's one of the reasons why you have a lot more anxiety and depression among young people today, is they have to come up with these big questions. And yeah, there's nothing to really anchor all that on.
Well, even like in previous eras of human history, even if you haven't looked to God for that answer, you've looked to your family. Who am I? What family am I born into? And that's the answer, who am I? What class am I born into? That's the answer to that question. And then, you know, more recently, as we've broken away from all that, it's at least your body tells you. And now it is nothing tells you. There is no constraint on who you are, which is why you literally now have people who are claiming they're not human. Literally. And, I mean, because there's nothing that can constrain you. There's no answer from outside of here that you can find.
Yeah.
So...
like the girl in fourth grade who thought she was a cat.
Right. Yeah.
But in real adult life.
But continuing, yeah.
Yeah.
And in a world that tells her, maybe you are a cat.
Yeah. And I kind of brought this up, like, yeah, you have, I think, Rachel Dolezal, who claimed to be black, and she was black. But that was her self-identity, right? So it's, but that's kind of out of bounds, which is kind of interesting. But yeah, people are trying to construct their own identity, independent of family, independent of God, independent of creation.
Don't you think we all kind of go through that, especially when we're young teens, identity?
Yeah, for sure.
We all go through that. struggling to fit in what box, where do we fit? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely see that here. So, have you figured out your identity yet?
Well, mostly.
Is there any kind of statistical data behind, like, what kind of upbringing the people that struggle with transgenderism come up in?
That would be an interesting research project, but often that won't get funding.
No one will touch that.
No one will touch that.
I'm just wondering, does it come from homosexual upbringing, like gay parents, or?
There would have been data, like you go back earlier generations when the social views were different on homosexuals, transsexuals. And, you know, the research, often new studies change and find new things as the cultural values change because people support research that will produce. Mm-hmm. So, and oftentimes if you design a study that is set up in such a certain way to find only a certain answer,
Yep. Then
that's what the data will show. So it's really hard to, you know, you can go back and look at data and people will say, but that data is out of date type of thing.
I mean, one of the studies that has come out there is a researcher from Brown University who has documented social contagion among young teenage girls. In those where you kind of have one person in high school go transgender, there's a viral effect where others do too. So we know that there's a lot of peer influence in that direction. I think when it comes to family background, I have anecdotal things to go by, but well, that not be not too.
And there are studies.
Our own church, kids raised in our own church, there's more than 1 in 50 in this generation, in this current generation. Our church. Who have expressed that they think they are.
Yeah.
There's more than 1 in 50.
Yeah.
And as far as like parenting, even parenting of young children, there's so much mainstream push to let them be who they want to be. Let them choose the rules. Let them rule the family. Like that's the whole way that the world is viewing parenting. And so that would obviously lend itself towards, sure, if you're feeling differently than, you know, like, and I should accept that. And the best way to be a parent is to accept your homosexuality or trans.
Right. Like, do your boys really want to be a girl?
I mean, one of them kind of does.
But, you know, you're like, come on, we're going to play with a Barbie doll. You
know, right.
You know.
Right.
How do you tactfully tell them, like, you don't have a choice? I mean, I wanted to dunk a basketball, but I never could. I wanted to throw a 98 mile an hour fastball, but my dad had to say, you throw 82 miles an hour, you're just not going to do it. So, how do you tactfully tell them, like...
Tell your kids or tell...
I mean, I know, depends on who you're
telling.
Tell everybody, really, like, hey, you are who you are. This is how you were...
Yeah, I would say one thing, like, when you have, let's say, a boy who plays with Barbie dolls. This is where the transgender ideology is self-contradicting. For a long time, I mean, feminist ideology was that boys can play with Barbie dolls. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, they try to blur the line where there's femininity and masculinity, and there's really no such thing. But then they kind of create these, I think, more extreme categories of masculinity and femininity so that you can talk about gender dysphoria, because this does require some definition of masculinity or femininity. And so they often just resort to stereotypes, right?
Yep.
And I think from a Christian worldview, we understand your gender is defined not by what toys you play with, but the body parts you've been given, right? So there is a sense where if you want to play with, you know what I'm saying? There's, it's almost like how homosexuality has destroyed, in a large part, male friendships, right? Because you kind of add this area of sexual intrigue to every relationship that you're with. I think in the same way, all this talk of gender dysphoria has kind of, you know, hurt the ability of boys to enjoy their time with their sister. You know what I'm saying?
Everything in child development, you know, even when I was studying it 10 years ago, would have said that it is perfectly healthy through many stages of development for children to play with, you know, gendered toys or things that are in either category. And I wonder, like, as this all changes in our society, like, will they go back and change that research to say? Because, you know, for many years they've said that's a wonderful thing. And, you know, teaching our, I'm happy for our boys to play with Barbies and learn how to play house and be a good dad.
Sure.
sure, pretend that all you want, but putting, I mean, I feel like we're reversing by going back to putting in those really specific boxes.
So there's like a narrative. So if you have a six-year-old place, let's say you live in Burbank, California, I know, and you have a boy who wants to play with Barbies, they're transgender.
And don't you think that comes from the parents suggesting it? I mean, the boys
and teachers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean,
absolutely.
Every one of my boys is all boy all the way. And every single one of them plays with Barbies at school every chance they get. So,
or we want to try on high heels.
That's right.
Or want to feel what it feels like to have their nails painted. Or.
And it just, to me, it just doesn't seem like, it's like, well, obviously, because I see all these other things that are just so the opposite way. But
yeah. And so that's why they have like a firm understanding of, I am a boy.
Mm-hmm.
As long as that's firm, they have the freedom to do that, and we don't have to panic. You know, so I think part of, you know, the Christian response is not panicking if our kids play with non-gender conforming toys, because that's not what determines whether or not you're gender is out of alignment. It's the ideology that is taught to them that will that will get them that way. And it is true that there's a big push for books, health classes. I mean, in school, a lot of the ideology is seeping through and giving them a grid to think about it. Like, honestly, with your kids, if you were to say, do you want to become a Christian? What would they say?
They would all say that they are.
Yeah, I want to become a Christian. You know, that's the power of suggestion. And we kind of understand that we don't want to push them in that direction because they're very impressionable. And so, but if they're in an environment where that's being pushed and that's a narrative that they can kind of peg their experiences to, because there is a powerful, like if you are struggling with your identity, okay, let's say you're an outsider and, you know, you're a junior high girl. Let's face it, junior high is like the most miserable time to be a human being. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Look at all the benefits you can get if you're transgender. You become a cause. You become a cause. You are part of a tightly knit community. You have power over people where they are now required to call you by your new name, use your new pronouns. I mean, there's a lot about being transgendered, and then you get answers, right? This is why I feel different. I'm the wrong gender. So you get an answer to these
plus
questions.
You get out of the attractiveness rat race. I mean, if you're a girl and you're not at the peak attractiveness, you're constantly self-conscious, and you get to remove yourself from that by, well, I'm not a girl.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, junior high girls want to get out of that rat race. That's miserable.
Yeah. In the high school junior high dating game, there's winners and losers. And if you're always losing, that's a way of getting out of the game.
I have my granddaughter lives here in town. First day of school, she says to me, Grandma, I just want you to know my teacher is a lesbian. And she goes, so she's married and she has kids. So if you see her, don't look at her weird or don't say anything. And I thought, the teacher like just goes and tells you this like the first day of school, like it's accept, like you're supposed to accept this, Olivia. It's like, and I saw her teacher and she really does look like a man. And I thought, how sad. She's a great teacher, but.
And then the child feels like they need to protect that teacher from people who might.
Yeah.
Disagree.
But I just was like, is she teaching kids that this, you better accept me and accept my lifestyle?
Yeah.
Yes.
But I thought that was, man, when I went to school, nobody ever was out. It was very hidden and very ashamed. And it's like, it's almost like they glorify it.
For sure.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, it just seems like it's a lot of political stuff. Is this going on in other countries? This kind of
Western Europe
push.
For this whole thing to work, you have to have a kind of a Western postmodern grid that the I defines morality. Now, if you go to a place like Japan, I'm sure it happens in Japan too. But in Japan, who defines you in Japan? your family. Your family. When you're struggling, think about your family. And so they don't have the identity crisis. It's not quite as strong. But when a culture kind of rejects God, rejects the family, what do you have left to define yourself? Well, it's you. And now I think political affiliation is kind of becoming that right now. And that's why there's almost a religious pull, because that's who you are, that's your community, that's your people. But yeah, a lot of this is just kind of based off of identity issues.
You know, we used to depend on science to, you know, science determines, mm-hmm. you know, what we should do, and they should study this and determine that it's not healthy, and that yeah. it's been politicized, and they just kind of throw science out the window.
Yeah.
But yet they say, look at the science. Right.
Yeah, but you can't believe in creation because that's not scientific.
Yeah.
You know?
We'll talk more about that later on.
You got it.
Yeah, it's true. Right. I mean, this is a self. This goes against much of the modern worldview.
Oh, and yeah, the center cannot hold.
The center can't hold. And that's why, watch England and how they're handling this in England. And I think you're going to see America eventually follow the same path. Or J.K. Rowling, you know, the Harry Potter author, you know, lifelong feminist, just said, you know, this is a huge threat to feminism. Yeah, because you're allowing men to be women, vice versa, and what it means to be a woman is gone. Even what it means to be gay is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, but I think this is what's going to happen is 20 years from now, you're going to have a lot of girls who had breast removal surgery,
mm-hmm.
who had a hysterectomy. Who had, or sometimes they are actually able to change the vagina, but keep the uterus, right? You're going to have a lot of that, and they're going to just say, I feel like I was pressured into this. And I think in the modern concept, like everybody, and you know, we understand people being victimized. I mean, this is a case where it truly is child abuse. It is like anorexia, at least people kind of push back on that. And kept it at bay. But yeah, you're going to, 20 years from now, I think there's going to be a major blowback, and you're going to find a lot of people who will just say, I was abused. I was pressured into this. A lot of gender reassignment surgeries will be deemed unnecessary. And so there's a little bit of pushback in that in the scholarly realm. Is it Abigail Shire?
Yeah,
wrote a book. And she actually believes in gender dysphoria. Like, she subscribes to it, but she would say it's a 1 in 10,000 incident, not 1 in 50.
And in the UK, their health service is now starting to push back on it. I'd have to look it up, but they're doing some things now that are showing that we know this is harmful, and we're going to try to stop this.
Yeah, there was a lawsuit where a woman says that I was wrongly sent through the system, and I think she sued the gender reassignment clinic and won. So that's why I think I'm being optimistic here, but seeing the trajectory of England, the center really can't hold on this too long. I mean, 1 out of 50, I mean, most responsible adults would say that's too high.
Well, because, I mean, you just look at teenagers, like they just jump on every bandwagon.
Exactly.
So how many of those kids
yeah.
just are doing it for attention or for mm-hmm. the social benefits and don't really feel like they're they're just confused. They're not like,
yeah.
I think if you're feeling like an outsider in high school and junior high, something like this, you immediately, everyone knows who you are, every teacher, every student, and that flips. Like, all you have to do is get on the platform that's popular and say that you're a victim of it, and you're, you know, all of that self-loathing becomes, you know, people lifting you up, where you just completely flip from, and that's like the desire of every junior higher for people
yeah.
to just know who they are. And
yeah.
that can happen very quickly when you choose one of those paths.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So there is an attractiveness to this. Are you going to say something?
Oh, I was just thinking teenagers really shouldn't be making any kind of permanent decisions at all.
Right. Right.
I mean, don't get the face tattoo. Don't get the face tattoo.
Do you have some experience with this, Jessica?
Yeah. Yeah, and that, I mean, you can't drink until you're 21. Right?
Yeah.
Right.
And I would say...
Is
a
tattoo? Is it
18? I don't know.
Yeah,
a lot of my high school kids have tattoos.
Yeah.
So I don't know who signs off, but it's pretty common.
Yeah, Corey.
No, I was just going to say, I would never allow Caleb to pick who he's going to marry today.
Right.
Or what career he's going to have for the rest of his life.
I would say...
I would never look at him and say, sure, you can make a decision that will just permanently wipe out anything else you could ever do. I would... He's not ready. And that's not a slam on him. That's where he is in life.
Yeah. I mean, teenage boys.
That's just...
I love them. But there is just... you know what I'm talking about? It's like, why are you just so stupid right now?
Yeah.
And then you tell them that, and they proceed to explain more and more.
Dave, we've been there.
Yeah.
You know that, right?
Teenage boys. I mean, it's like we're
but teenage girls aren't any better. I would have been. Yeah. Oh my goodness, you flying. Oh,
I mean,
no,
when you're a teenage boy,
you
say the two worst words. Watch this.
Yeah.
Right, watch this. And whenever you say watch this, something bad is about to happen.
Sorry.
Isn't that true?
Yeah.
Something stupid, at least.
Something stupid. Yeah. Especially if there's girls.
Yeah,
that's why I like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. You know, I think it just kind of captures. You know, when he's like showing off with the head shaking. But you know what I'm talking about? Fantasy. Yeah.
With the chicks dig it song.
Well, I was gonna share. So being at a poor high, teacher, knowing the staff and the students, that it seems like those students who vocally or non-vocally say or signal that they're trans are the least vocal in the trans cause. And then after that, classmates who are not trans but will call themselves like advocates, they're more vocal.
Mm-hmm.
And then the staff, you have staff that are kind of in the middle or unsure, but they don't want to go against them. They're kind of even a little more, and then you have some staff that are very vocally in support. And so that's kind of just my experience. You know, I've had students who, male and female, that, you know, wear the other clothing, have the other haircut, claim the other name, those type of things. And I've had very positive relationships with them. I've never had to call them other pronouns or, you know, I've never affirmed anything about their choices, and I've been able to ask them occasionally just very calm questions about what's going on, you know, just get small conversations. And you know, just my perception is, much like the question you ask or they're asking who they are, they are sinners like us who are very lost and are looking for some way to find their identity. And I could think in other cultures and other times it would have been some other expression of that. And for our culture and our time right now, that's the one that they're kind of being pushed towards.
Yeah.
You know, we're in a very sexualized culture and society. And so, you know, when you think about kids, for sure, you know, that a lot of them seem to respond well to just loving, honest conversation. And they are very accepting of when I say, if I say what I believe, you know, I believe that, you know, we're created as men and women, you know, and that's who you are, and they're okay. And I think that like you said before, the most vocal are ones who get their identity tied up in the culture or the politics or...
Yeah, so self-righteous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a cause, there's an enemy, we have to defeat this enemy.
Yeah, to be an ally, to be an advocate. And the fuel is self-righteousness, not necessarily trying to find a new identity.
So it's a very different conversation where I usually don't get into a conversation with the political activist teacher.
Yeah.
There's really not a benefit that's going to come.
Yeah.
But there's lots of opportunities to talk to kids who are...
And I think that's very important. Like, the self-righteous are the most difficult to reach. I mean, just ask Jesus, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the most dangerous people, the most hardened people are self-righteous. And so, you know, there's this cause, there's this liberty, and you have all these self-righteous people who will come to the aid of this transgender people, which makes it even more. You know, that really good-looking, smart kid is a transgender ally. He will be your number one cheerleader and fan if you become transgender, right? So, so there is a difference between the two. Any other questions? We are inching along. So we'll talk
question
about
this
two. Next question. Should we use the preferred pronouns, why or why not?
What page?
I would say no.
Page 13.
I had a conversation with the other staff about this too, I mean, the small groups, but one of the first things is, again, you're, as a Christian, if you don't believe someone's a man, then you're lying to that person, to yourself, to everyone. You're not being truthful, you're not being honest, and that's kind of a very simple way to explain, you know, you can even say, I'm not telling you what you have to believe, but it would be dishonest of me to say that I believe you're a man, because this is what how I believe, you know, based on, you could give all sorts of reasons why, but I think that's a starting point that I have for a long time.
Yes.
How do they handle it, like, in sports, in the locker rooms, and that kind of stuff in high school? I'm just curious.
Well, I don't know yet of any trans students who are using the opposite sex locker room. So I'm not aware of how that happens. And I know that they're, like I said before, that they have a separate single shower bathroom nearby. So I don't know if there is someone. And I'm not aware of any trans students, boys that want to play on the girls' teams. A few years ago, we had some girls come out and started wrestling, and then they developed a girls' wrestling. So I think that's kind of a recent change where the girls, for a short time, were wrestling against the boys, and then as participation went up, they showed that, well, let's have girls' wrestling. Okay, and not that I want my girls to be wrestlers, but, you know, it's better to have girls wrestling than
yeah,
girls.
Yeah.
So that's...
Yeah.
But I mean, I do know that in the coasts and in other places you have, you know, a biological boys are raking in the state championships in girls' athletics.
Yeah.
Question. Is there a time, as a believer, that it is the loving thing to do to call that person by the name they've chosen? Or is there a place for that? I agree with Scott that it is lying and all of that, but I think when you're in a small, with that person all the time environment, like, what's the loving way to handle that?
Yeah, the next question, should you use their preferred name, Andrea, instead of
Andre?
Or Andre instead of Amanda, for instance?
I mean, that's a little different because names are not necessarily, I mean, you've got Jamie of both.
Yeah.
I think pronouns them a little bit more.
Heather instead of Harold.
I mean, I would call somebody Butterfly if that's what they called. Age, not real, but...
I think there's a couple of things. Like, one, if somebody were to say my name is Harold, and they are clearly a girl, I'm like, okay, I'll just take your word for it. It might be different if it was your child. You know what I'm saying? Because you know who their name is, and because you gave them that name. And that was a kind of a heritage that you passed on to them. And I don't think it would be sin for parents to go by the new name, or grandparents to go by the new name. I probably wouldn't, because I would want to drill over and over and over again that you can't change who you are. That your name, your body, all of that was part of the identity that was given to you. And so I'm not going to be a part of anything that moves you away from that or think that you can change it. But that would be more of a wisdom thing on my part. That would be the approach I would have. But if it's a stranger, it's a little bit different.
Well, and I'm thinking more of, like, your cousin, your sister, your roommate, your, you know, those situations where
you have an intimate relationship with that person. They're not your child where you're speaking their identity into them and reminding them of that.
Yeah.
But you, I mean, having that relationship with someone in a little bit more of an intimate setting, like, how do you do the letter thing?
Yeah, and I think it just, it depends. I don't think it's wrong to use the, I think it's wrong to use the new gender. It gets a little bit hazy when you go into, are you willing to use the G's, you know, the X, Y, however you say that. Do you use the they, them? And just avoid gendered pronouns altogether. And the using the opposite sex ones, that's clearly a lie. But I think you get into, what about these other ones? Yeah, I don't know. That's, I think that just kind of takes wisdom, depends on the situation. So if it was like your sister.
Which is not, but.
Not, yes. I know. That. Yeah, or if it was my brother, if you said that, you know, he now goes by this. I don't know.
But I do think there's, I mean, there's definitely a place for, like, you don't have to die on every hill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And their main problem is not the wrong name.
Mm-hmm.
It's that they're finding identity apart from their creator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I think we should use pronouns as expansively as we can without telling a lie. So I would not call a known woman he, but I would call a known woman they.
Yeah.
Because I call an unknown baby they before they're born.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody is coming over, but I'm not sure who they're going to be here at this time. I mean, the English language does have an expansive use of they.
Mm-hmm.
It just does. And so I would not, I do not believe that speaking a falsehood to do that. And that's something I would be willing to do to preserve a relationship and an ability to keep the conversation going.
Yeah, and like this, I this one girl that wants to be called by a boy's name and that's trans. I just kind of make it not the issue. Hey, how are you?
Yeah.
You know, how are you doing? And
yeah,
we just interact.
Awesome.
Not, I don't make a point to say, hey, she did this. You know, like,
that's not
the key issue. And if, I mean, it's kind of like if you're pushed on it, you can say, you know, that have a conversation. Or sometimes it's even, you know, I still think of you this way, and it's, you know, just be honest about.
Yeah, I would just use their name instead of the pronoun as much as possible. That'd be my personal solution. I mean, if I'm talking directly to a person, how often do you use he, she, when you're doing that?
And a lot of times, you know, just having a conversation, it's an opportunity to open the door to have a conversation where you're able to show that you're a loving person that cares about them, that loves them, that wants to find a way to honor them and to honor God at the same time.
Yeah.
And they may not agree with exactly, but you're working to try and come to a way that you have a good relationship with them, but maintain your conscience and your honesty.
Yeah. Well, I say we made scintillating progress.
We're blazing through.
Well, Father, I do thank you for this day, and I thank you that we had this opportunity to talk through some of these issues, and I pray that you'll give us opportunities to apply this wisdom in a gracious way. We do pray for those students in Florida who are experimenting with this, that they will just really seek the gospel and finding their true identity in you. Pray for Scott and some of the other Christian teachers that will just speak light into a very dark reality. In Christ's name, amen.